When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your hosts, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
And we are back, Crossover NBA podcast. I am Chris Mannix in Los Angeles, where the Lakers have gone home early. The Denver Nuggets completing a four-game sweep on Monday night, knocking off the Lakers. Despite a pretty impressive performance from LeBron James in that one, we'll get into that game in New York. Chris Herring, senior writer over SI, has got a great story up on SI.com right now, an exclusive with Carmelo Anthony, who announced his retirement from the NBA on Monday. Carmelo spoke at length to Chris about that. I encourage you to check that out over at SI.com. And in Miami, fresh off South Beach, ready for game four of the NBA Conference Finals, Rohan Akhmi. Fellas, what's going on? Rohan, how are you feeling this morning?
Listen, I'm in the sports capital of the world, Mannix. What doesn't Miami have going for right now? The Panthers are up 3-0 in the Conference Finals. The Heat are up 3-0 in the Conference Finals. Messi is going to sign with Inter Miami. I think the Marlins are leading the MLB in one-run win games. This is it. This is where it's all happening. I think we had an F1 race here a few weeks ago. You can't ask for much more.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the Heat Celtics series. I don't.
I thought Rohan was going to throw in the Welcome to Miami song from 25 years ago, too.
I just decided to move past that. I decided whatever he was talking about, my eyes kind of glazed over.
You got F1.
I didn't care. You just, sports capital of the world, whatever. I was sitting next to Nick Friedell from ESPN before game one, or during game one of the Celtics Heat series. And like that first half is going on. The Celtics are rolling. They're up by double digits. They could have been up even more. And I was thinking about texting you being like, there's no way Miami beats this Boston team. Like, there's no way. And then the whole thing just completely unraveled from there. So we'll talk more about that series, specifically the buzz around Joe Mazzulla, the Celtics coach who is on thin ice, it seems like, right now in Boston. But I want to start talking about what we saw in Los Angeles on Monday night. The Nuggets, your Nuggets, Rohan, defeating the Lakers in four games. A tremendous performance in that game from Nikola Jokic, who has 30 points, a triple-double, his eighth triple-double in this postseason. That moves him past Wilt Chamberlain on the list for the most triple-doubles in a playoff. That's a decades-old record that Nikola Jokic just zoomed past, and he still has at least four games to go to add to that list. We're going to get to the Lakers side of it, specifically LeBron. But Denver's been one of those teams that has long believed it has been disrespected, that Nikola Jokic doesn't get the respect he deserves as a superstar player, that they don't get the respect they deserve as one of the great teams in the NBA. Rohan, did Denver prove something in this series with the Lakers?
Yeah, I definitely think that they are turning the tides in terms of the national discourse about them, the awareness about them. You know, I went to Denver last March to write about kind of Jokic, but also this phenomenon, right? Like, Jokic won, when he won his second MVP, he still didn't get a Christmas Day game. This is a team that is not really, you know, put front and center by the NBA in many ways. And I think that they realize that. And when I talked to Michael Malone that day, you know, he's like, listen, it's not a rallying cry. We're not expecting to be the first segment on First Take every day, but, you know, we also think that we have one of the best players in the NBA, and we're not getting any kind of respect for that. And I think what, when you're in a matchup with the Lakers and you play the way Jokic did, I think this was the first time a lot of casual fans, a lot of people who are even bigger NBA fans just don't get a chance to watch the Nuggets play, right? Like, they play, they're kind of more of a West Coast team. Their games are on late. They don't have a ton of national games. They had a Christmas Day game this year, but it wasn't the marquee one. So I definitely think that they are starting to not only win over fans, but even people who are like, why did Jokic win two MVPs? That was an analytics MVP. The nerds won him that, et cetera. The fact that he's had this, it's a historic playoff run. He's averaging a triple-double. This is something I'm probably going to write about. We're obviously in a little bit of an era where stats are higher than they've ever been before, but you could put his playoff run up with the best of KD's, the best of Steph's, LeBron's. I mean, you name the NBA great. He's right up there with any of them. So I definitely think that I don't know how much longer Malone's going to be able to play that nobody respects this card, because I think a lot of people are going to pick them to win the finals no matter who they're playing. And I think a lot of people now are seeing why Jokic won those two MVPs.
Well, the nobody respects Jokic card never really made a lot of sense. He won two straight MVPs. Like, you are respected. You are noticed by the voters. Herring, I look at the Nuggets as being a proof of concept of a couple things. One, the draft works. Like, if you draft well, you are going to have success. They draft Nikola Jokic in the second round. That was as brilliant a pick as it was lucky, but they get him to be the tentpole of that team. They draft Jamal Murray. They draft Michael Porter Jr. when Michael Porter Jr. had about a dozen red flags around him because of that back, and they stuck by him, and he was excellent during these playoffs. They're a testament to the process, the draft process, and seeing that play out and developing players internally. They're also a testament to not having kind of knee-jerk reactions when things go a little bit bad. I mean, Jamal Murray gets hurt. They don't look for a replacement for Jamal Murray. They patiently wait for him to come back and become the Jamal Murray of old. And he was outstanding in this series. He shot better than 50% in three of the four games of this series. Scored 25 points in the clincher. Made big shots in previous games. They also stood by Michael Malone over the last few years. I mean, Malone, at different times, you know, there has been speculation that maybe he wasn't the right guy to coach this team. And firing the coach, as we've seen during this cycle, is the easiest thing to do. Things go wrong, can the coach. Budenholzer, you're out. Doc Rivers, take a hike. It would have been very easy for Tim Connelly and then later Calvin Booth to let go of Michael Malone and bring somebody else in. But they stuck by him. He has had a great postseason. And I think it's just proof that if you're just a little bit patient and you trust that the coach you hired is the right one, and that you trust the players you drafted are the right guys, stuff like this can happen. Because this is not only a team built to win a championship this year, this is a sustainable team for years to come.
I mean, I think you nailed a lot of it on the head, and really, because we're far removed away from a lot of it, that it's easy to forget some of the context. I think you could actually start a lot of it with the Michael Porter thing. Michael Porter, for a lot of people, was thought to be a guy that could be in contention for the number one pick. He obviously had the back issues. He falls to, what was it, 14th? The Nuggets had almost made the playoffs. The Nuggets not knocked out in the last game of the regular season that year, but I think Minnesota, a Jimmy Butler Minnesota team. And so they end up getting basically the very end of the lottery because of that, because they were the last team not to make the playoffs. And they take Michael Porter, who, that's a risky move. When you're in, at that point, basically win now mode, you've got a star, a guy that is on the cusp of becoming a superstar at that point in Jokic. You might look for the most stable guy, which is not going to be someone that has back problems, is not going to be someone that, aside from his gait and his stature, might struggle to really hunch down and play defense. Maybe isn't the most well-rounded player, but a guy that has a ton of upside. So you get him. I think about patience from the standpoint of how many people have complained and critiqued Kawhi and Derrick Rose and all these other guys that sat out a little bit longer than people were used to, maybe not even a little bit longer, a lot longer than people were used to from the standpoint of a major injury and not coming. By the way, Derrick Rose and Kawhi Leonard have both had multiple injuries now. I won't say because they came back earlier than they should have, but maybe it was just their bodies. The same thing could have happened to Jamal Murray if he'd come back too soon. And he took some scrutiny, and quite frankly, I think a lot of people were wondering, why isn't he back when the team has cleared him? So there's that. There's the stuff about Malone, who, as you suggested with the rest of the cycle, Michael Malone has been short-circuited before from the standpoint of Sacramento, who just now made the playoffs, you know, just now this season, but had a pretty decent run, I thought, going with Sacramento. I think most people thought that, and was kind of axed over, you know, the fact that DeMarcus Cousins got sick, essentially, and the team tailspinned while it happened. So that, Jokic, and the idea of him needing to get into shape, you know, and then he did it, and then the team is, you know, outlasting the Lakers, and Jokic is running up and down the floor, racing up and down the floor off every miss as a two-time MVP, a guy that could have won three in a row. And I think what we're now seeing, to go full circle with this, so many people were critiquing the idea of like, well, you can't give the MVP to a guy that would give him three in a row because that hasn't happened in 40 years. What stratosphere are you putting him in if he wins a third straight MVP? I think what we're going to find out really soon is that he deserves to be in that stratosphere. I think a lot of us kind of saw that happening already. The only thing that was missing was the championship. And like he looks very well on his way to accomplishing that this year. It might be the first of a few. And then it doesn't look like it always looks silly until it actually happens. The hype around people. Michael Jordan went through it where people wanted to call him the best ever, but he hadn't won a championship. And there's a YouTube video of Pat Riley interviewing Michael Jordan. He was like, will you take it as an affront? Like if you don't win one, like will you feel lesser to yourself if you don't win one because some people are calling you the greatest ever? And he's like, well, you know, like, no, it won't take away from what I've done, but of course I want to win one. Then he wins six. It always, there has to be a starting place for all this stuff. It generally requires a lot of patience. It requires making a lot of the right calls. This team knocked it out of the park last offseason with KCP and the idea of getting off Will Barton, going to go get KCP. Monty Morris was one of my favorite players in the league to watch, one of the best backup guards. That was big to let him go to go get KCP. And not to mention the Bruce Brown signing, which I know Rohan loved. I thought it was the single best signing of the offseason. I think I said that as the offseason was still happening. So they've knocked it out of the park in so many regards. They clearly look like the most complete team to me. Even if they lose to the Heat or Boston, I guess it's possible. I still might come away saying at this point, based on what I've seen, that this was just the most complete team and that they should run it back, even if they somehow lose. You know, I feel like it would be something weird that they would lose over because it's not going to be because of their roster, what they didn't have. This is a really complete team.
I have a question for you guys.
Porter Jr. Let me just say this. I love the Porter Jr. pick at the time. Like that was, you know, Tim Connelly was in charge then, and I completely got his mindset there. It's like we're drafting 14th. If we go a traditional route and take the guy that without Porter Jr. is the highest ranked guy on our board, what are the chances he turns into a success? Look at the guys drafted around there. Some of them were good players. I think Troy Brown was either a pick or two after that. Dante DiVincenzo was in that draft, but no player with the upside of Michael Porter Jr. And think about it. Like the Clippers had the two picks prior to that. They drafted, they did a trade where they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with one of those picks, which was excellent, smart pick. And then they take Jerome Robinson with that next pick. Look, I went to Boston College. I saw a lot of Boston College games. I could have told you then that Jerome Robinson was not going to make it in the NBA, that he was not a NBA kind of talent. Imagine where the Clippers would be right now if with their second pick in the first round, not their only pick, their second pick in the first round, they had used it to take a flyer on Michael Porter Jr. Like, the way this team was assembled.
It's a gamble worth taking at that point, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the Nuggets, they have just pushed the right button time and time again.
Do you guys think there's any doubt right now that Jokic is the best player in the NBA?
No. No, I mean,
you said, is there any doubt at this point? Is that your question?
Like, is there anyone that you're saying taking over him right now?
No, I don't think you can. I mean, it's. I know Giannis is probably, you know, doing the office, the look in, you know, to the camera from the office where he's like, yo, I missed half my series and I still did my job. This isn't on me.
Jokic isn't throwing the ball out of bounds with 2 seconds left, though, to avoid shooting
free
throws.
But I mean, let's be honest. It doesn't come down to a single play, but I also think Jokic could do the same look into the camera from the office from just the last couple of years of like, so what do you mean? Yeah. I've won MVP 2 years in a row, could have won it, was more efficient in year three. My team was the one seed in year three. Like every general metric of like who usually wins the award, I would still fit that criteria. It's that Isaiah thing from the Last Dance where he's like, I fit the criteria, but I wasn't picked or whatever it was. Jokic can easily say that too. So I think that there are a couple of people that can claim it. I'm sure Steph, if he's healthy, feels like he still should be in the conversation based on having won it the title last year. But I think Jokic deserves it at this point. Like he's been waiting in line for the majority of most people. But he deserves it. And dominating the way he has, the fact that there's been no defensive answer for him and that it's very much like a pick-your-poison sort of defense you've got to play against him and his team, this was the missing piece for so many people of the idea of like, yeah, but can he win on the biggest stage? And he's doing that. And to do it in a sweep, I didn't see that coming against this Lakers team and the type of defense that the Lakers play. I've been really impressed, even as someone that already thought that he would have been a worthy third MVP. I didn't pick him, but a worthy third-time MVP if he had won it. I think a lot of us could look at it and say that.
Giannis failed this season.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what he says, he failed this season. I understand that he missed a couple of the games, but he played in full length two of them, and they lost. Like, they lost those games. I know he was banged up, but everybody's banged up at this stage. What I would say about Jokic is that to this point, he has never failed with a team that had a chance to win a championship. Mm-hmm. The last few years, he has been on playoff teams. But none of those teams did I think had a real chance to win a championship. The bubble team, still a little bit young, inexperienced, not quite ready for prime time. 2021, Jamal Murray goes out like, you know, half an hour before the playoffs were going to start. He misses all of the next season. Michael Porter Jr. has battled injuries the last couple of years. Only this season, this was the first time that Jokic has had the kind of talent around him where if he didn't elevate it, then it would have been a failure for him. Just the same way it was a failure for Giannis, the same way, honestly, it was a failure for Joel Embiid.
Yep.
You know, if Jokic had come up short, it would have been a failure for him, but he hasn't. In fact, he's done the opposite. He has thrived. He has dominated. He has been a much better defensive player than people have given him credit for. And he has been an absolutely supernatural offensive player who is making shots that you can't do on a court by yourself. Like, you can't pull the ball over your head and make those shots. You give me 100 of those shots, I couldn't make them by myself. Jokic is making them in the first and second half of a clincher in the NBA postseason. So, this to me, Jokic is the best player in the NBA, and he's created, I think, a little bit of separation for himself because of his play in this postseason. Let's now talk about what emerged as a bigger story on Monday night, which is LeBron James dropping hints that he may retire. To recap kind of what happened at that press conference after the game, LeBron multiple times declined to address next season, go into next season, and then on the last question he was asked, which really had nothing to do with next season, LeBron came out and said, I've got a lot to think about my basketball future. Subsequently, a report from Chris Haynes from Bleacher Report TNT came out that said LeBron James is contemplating retirement. That was no accident. That was no mistake. That was pre-written for, you know, whatever this happened with the Lakers were ultimately eliminated. So I've got some thoughts on this, but Rohan, we'll start with you. What did you make of LeBron's hints that he may not be back next year?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. First of all, I just want to quickly point out how we've entirely glossed over the idea that Mannix was going to take this massive victory lap that the Lakers were winning the finals, and we've somehow gone.
I mean, you know what though? But he made it pretty far in that race.
He did. He did.
The idea that they made it to Western Conference. I lost the ability to.
Credit to Mannix. He stuck by the take, and it was a good one. And we were all scared for a little bit. So, Shout out to you, Mannix. I think there's no way LeBron is retiring. I have a very hard time. I'm not doubting the reporting. I know that he's clearly considering it, but I just have a very hard time.
It's not even reporting. It's him. It's him. It's telling people.
Yes,
but it's him saying it. He's saying it too.
He's saying it.
And by the time some people listen to this podcast, the Lakers exit interviews are in a couple hours today as we record this. So we'll probably have some more information about LeBron's future as well.
Right. You know, yeah, he spoke to Dave McMenamin and he pretty explicitly said to Dave, I'm considering walking away. You know, a lot of people I've already seen people play connect the dots. Is this a pressure play to get the Lakers to do some massive roster changes? Is this somehow connected to Kyrie Irving? Like, you know, the tinfoil hats are already coming out and there's stuff all over there. I think there's a lot that's going into this. I think LeBron, to me, the tell was, the question LeBron was asked was about to reflect on his season, right? At his age, passing the scoring record, et cetera. And then he kind of added on that little bit at the end about, I got a lot of thinking to do. I hesitate to say calculated just because that has such a negative connotation. But I do think LeBron knew what he was doing. I think he was just kind of floating it out there. I'm not going to try to sit here and guess what his motivation is right now. But my ultimate take is I just have a very hard time believing he's going to walk away for several reasons. Number one, he just had an incredible game. He arguably had one of his best games of the season, 40 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists. He slowed down a bit offensively in the second half, but that's because he was guarding the best offensive player in the world in Jokic and actually doing a pretty decent job one-on-one, drew those two charges. He did all of this while playing on the foot injury. I thought the important part in Dave McMenamin's story for ESPN was LeBron saying, I feel like I can get back to the player I was earlier in the season if I rehab my foot. He might need surgery on the foot. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he took some time off to start the season, something along those lines, maybe integrated a more aggressive load management regimen into his schedule moving forward, just because he's been dealing with these injuries in LA time and time again. But listen, they finally put a sensical roster around him in Los Angeles, and we saw that the team could compete. I think they're a few teaks away from being a championship contender. They were in the Final Four this year. To me, the idea that he's going to walk away from that when there are still rings on the table theoretically for him to get and the opportunity to play with his son, either with him or against him, I just have a hard time believing he's going to give all that up.
Herring, what'd you think?
I mean, that last part that Rohan just raised, I think, is the most apt. Is just that he literally has headlined, circled, bold-faced the idea that at this point he's accomplished everything he wants to. The scoring crown, you know, he overtook, you know, what to that point might have been the most dominant team in NBA history. After being down 3-1, he's won 4 titles. He's won a title with each of the 3 teams he's played with. At this point, it seems like the last frontier really is for him to play long enough to play alongside his son. He's essentially said that. So now to think that he's this close, the idea that his son just committed to play somewhere that, you know, we'll see how great his son is at that level and whether he's NBA caliber right away. But the idea that he could be a year away from doing that and now just call it quits, I'm sure it's a frustrating end of the season. I'm sure it has been a real roller coaster of a season, given that this is a team that at one point was not even in playoff contention, and then all of a sudden they finally do what LeBron has asked by making the trade, and then they become extremely competitive right away. They beat the defending champions, and then they go out the way they just did in a sweep, which is not common for LeBron. It's happened, but it's obviously not common. Certainly at this stage of the postseason. It's probably a lot of thoughts. I don't doubt that he's got at least 1% of his brain thinking that. One of his best friends just retired yesterday too. So I don't doubt that he's thought about it, but I would be stunned if he did that. It's not to say that the best player in the world, the best basketball player to ever live, doesn't occasionally do that and just pull a fast one on you and throw you off. But I would be stunned, to say the least, if he did that. It would make a lot more sense, and I hate to kind of feed into fan fiction, but it would make a lot more sense if he took a year off to then have more left in the tank to play with his son. I don't think he would be leaving the game forever. I don't think that he would be leaving the game at all, but I really don't think he'd be leaving it forever.
So there are two ways you could look at this in my mind. One, you could take it at face value, which is certainly fair. This has been an exhausting season for LeBron. Mentally exhausting because of all the drama at the start of the season, the Russell Westbrook saga that played itself out over a matter of months. Physically exhausting, both with probably the most significant injury of his playing career, one that, as Rowan pointed out, almost and may still require surgery to ultimately correct, and then the toll of having to play 40-plus minutes in the postseason. In that moment, I can see LeBron sitting there going, do I really want to do this again? 20 years in, age 39 next year, do I really want to put my body through all this again? The other way to look at it is as a leverage play. No player in modern history has used contracts as leverage as well as LeBron James. He goes back to Cleveland, announces in SI that he's coming home, and then proceeds to sign like a bunch of one-year contracts. He used contracts and how short-term they were to pressure Cleveland into basically doing whatever it took every single year to build a winner around him. This could be that. LeBron has a contract for next year. It's what made the decision to sign that contract extension so surprising last summer, because he didn't really need to do it. I understand the thinking at the time. You take that talking point off the table. You take a potential distraction away from the team, but it was still surprising to see him do that. LeBron has a contract for next year, but it's only for next year. And he's going to want the Lakers to put top-tier talent around him, the future of the team be damned. And that could mean Kyrie Irving. Like, we just watched D'Angelo Russell scuffle through the conference finals. He couldn't make a shot.
That's putting it kindly.
Well, D'Angelo Russell can't make a shot. He's useless because he can't defend anybody either. Like, Bruce Brown, way to go, Bruce Brown. Like, saying D'Angelo Russell can't defend anybody or whatever he said there. Dead on accurate. So LeBron might be looking at next season and saying, look, the mindset of the Lakers this offseason might be just to bring the band back together, to re-sign D'Angelo Russell to some kind of contract, to bring back Austin Reeves on a pricey contract, to bring back Rui Hachimura on a contract, and to build on the chemistry that this team built over the final couple of months of the season. LeBron might be looking at that and go, I don't know. You know, this team was pretty good, but Denver's not going anywhere. Memphis will be back. The Warriors will probably be back. He might be looking at that situation and saying, we need to do something big. We need to roll the dice and go after somebody. And that somebody is probably Kyrie Irving. Kyrie is the one guy. Look, LeBron knows he can win a championship with Kyrie Irving. He knows it. He's done it. And Kyrie, at his best, and we can debate how often he's at his best is still an elite guard in this league. So I can certainly believe that LeBron, who, by the way, Kyrie was at game four on Monday night, I can believe that LeBron would want to play with Kyrie Irving. I can also understand the Lakers having no interest in bringing in Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie, if he comes to LA, is not coming on a one-year deal. He's going to come on a 3 or a 4 year deal. And LeBron, if we're being honest, doesn't give a damn about what happens to the Lakers after next season. It's all about next season for LeBron, and then he figures out what Bronny's going to do, where Bronny's going to play, and where and how that puzzle kind of fits together in his career. He's worried about next year, and if he believes that his best chance to win a championship is to play with Kyrie Irving, this is a way to exert leverage. He can say to the Lakers, look, I don't need your money. Like, I make plenty off the court. I've made billions, more than a billion, in my playing career. I'll just walk away if you don't do what I want you to do. That was one of the first things that popped into my head. LeBron is too competitive to not want to play basketball. He's playing at too high a level to not want to play basketball. But we have seen in the past LeBron exert leverage through his contractual status. And to me, Rohan, that felt like part of what he was doing in that moment.
Definitely. And that's hard to ignore, especially when he doesn't have, as you mentioned, the same leverage as he's had previously in his career. Usually he has that I'm an expiring situation to help. I mean, he has that to an extent here, but it's a little bit different when he's at the age he's at, et cetera. It is interesting. Not only was Kyrie Irving at the game, Trae Young was at the game. He's a Clutch Sports client. The Athletic reported that's someone who the Lakers have already had internal discussions about.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that.
I don't think so.
Trae is like Kyrie light, but Trae hasn't proven anything in the postseason.
I agree. I don't think that would be as good of a move. I understand why you have the discussion, right? Because as you mentioned, how often is Kyrie at his best? Do you maybe think someone like Trae Young is more trustworthy, more gettable, et cetera? I do think the Lakers are in a fascinating position with their roster because they only, I think, have about six guys who are under contract next season. They're going to have to figure out contracts for Rui Hachimura, for Austin Reeves, figure out what they're going to do with D'Angelo Russell. I think we're all on the same page that this team would probably like to upgrade from D'Angelo Russell, but does that mean you let him walk? Does that mean you do a sign and trade? They are in a little bit of a crossroads offseason because there are opportunities for them to improve the roster, certainly, but we've seen Rob Pelinka now do four or five makeovers of this team. Sometimes they've been great. Other times they've been really problematic and hurt the team. So they're in a bit of a interesting situation here because they have to nail this summer. And I do think LeBron is keeping a close eye. Let's put it this way. If they swing like some incredible trades and upgrade the roster, LeBron's coming back. he's not leaving the Lakers if they make the team better. So I definitely think there's an element here of, you know, he wants to put some pressure again on the front office to make sure that they can take the next step.
Man, is there something
to be said, though, about the fact that, like, I can't help but watch KCP, like, shoot daggers into the Lakers and Alex Crusoe making first-team All-NBA defense. Rob Pelinka, like, sure, credit for turning this team around midseason. I certainly wondered if a lot of that could have been done sooner to not exert as much pressure physically on LeBron and AD having to play back-to-backs all of a sudden at the end of the season because you need to get in to the postseason. They've had opportunities where Bron's input was used before with regards to Westbrook. So I understand LeBron being like, I'm LeBron, so be it. Because of that, you need to kind of make me happy to placate me more or less, to appease. I'm taking quite a deep breath if I'm the Lakers and you're essentially holding a gun to my head saying I need to sign Kyrie for a long-term deal. In light of the fact that I've done this before. Now, granted, Kyrie is a better basketball player than Westbrook, but he's not reliable either from the standpoint of putting the team first. Maybe he would be happier in that situation, but there were times he was unhappy in New York playing with one of his closest friends in KD. So we'll see what happens, but it's just in light of what you're saying, Chris, the idea of it's literally about next year for LeBron, and then after that, it's more about his situation with his family, his son. Okay, then great. If I know that, and that's essentially what you're signaling, and maybe even telling the Lakers, and maybe telling the basketball world as a whole, I'll be damned if I'm signing Kyrie to 4 years based on that. For 1 year, good luck. I don't think I want to be beholden to him for that long. Also, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. If I'm the Lakers, I'm probably going to, I don't know if I'm going to call a bluff, but I'm certainly going to have a conversation as opposed to just blindly signing that. And I think Rob Pelinka would be smart to do the same thing.
Yeah, 2 years ago, they made that Westbrook deal in part because LeBron pushed for it. And that turned out to be catastrophic. Like, that turned out to set the Lakers back a couple of years. To your point, they corrected it. Rob Pelinka deserved credit for that. But now they find themselves perhaps in almost the same situation where to get a player the caliber of Kyrie Irving, you're going to have to gut the roster. You're going to have to let Rui Hachimura walk. You're going to have to move off D'Angelo Russell. You're going to have to, you know, I don't know what it means for Austin Reeves. Can they afford Austin Reeves if he gets a $100 million contract from somebody that they have to match? It puts them in a difficult situation. I think if you're the Lakers, you got to find a middle ground. You say to LeBron, all right, we'll find a replacement for D'Angelo Russell. We'll find somebody more reliable offensively than D'Angelo Russell so you don't have such a burden going into every playoffs. But we can't just blow up our team to bring in Kyrie Irving. We can't do it because if we don't succeed next year, our next 3 years after that are just, they're just a disaster. They're a wasteland, you know, trying to rely on Kyrie, who, look, whatever you think about Kyrie, and I think deep down he's a good guy. I don't think he's a bad person, but he did detonate LeBron's last run in Cleveland. He was part of the toxicity that ended the Celtics' chances of doing anything. He blew up a Nets team that was, what, 20-1 or something like that in the last 20-some-odd games that Kevin Durant had played in with Kyrie Irving because he didn't get the contract that he liked from Brooklyn. So it's just a major risk for the Lakers to make. But that's how I read this, guys. Like, I just, you know, I don't think LeBron wants to stop playing.
Reading.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to stop playing.
I think it's a very fair reading.
You know, and I think, you know, in the coming days and weeks, because things tend to get out of his camp every so often, they tend to leak out, we'll start to hear more and more about the fit for Kyrie Irving with the Lakers.
He's definitely not walking away. He's definitely not walking away. And we're all in agreement.
I don't think he's walking away.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. I do. Last thing, Rohan, you're going to be at Heat Celtics later tonight. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Heat if they close this thing out a little bit later in the week. But as far as the Celtics go, it is now widely assumed that Joe Mazzulla is going to be the fall guy for this. I guess the question is, should he be? Should Joe Mazzulla take the fall for a 4 or a 5 game exit by the Celtics?
This is an interesting one because let's say they had lost in 7 in a close game to Philly. I don't think people are scapegoating Mazzulla the way they are this series where they're down 3-0, obviously facing elimination. Listen, obviously I was at game 3 and it was immediately people were like, is this team quitting? It was kind of baffling to watch that third quarter. You know, they start with a Marcus Smart and one, cut the lead to 12, and people are like, okay, here we go. This is going to be a game. And then the Heat, I think at one point, stretched the lead to 30 in that same quarter. After the game, I think what really is like also weirdly hurting Mazzulla here is I don't think he's been able to like strike the right tone in his post-game press conferences. You know, he had this post-game press conference after game 3 where he was like, it's all on me, it's my fault, and he kept kind of repeating that. But in a way that didn't feel authentic to him. I'm not saying it was disingenuous, but what makes me nervous if I'm the Celtics is if they get rid of Mazzulla, we're now looking for our fourth coach in 4 years, I believe. They went Stevens, Udoka, Mazzulla. Now you're looking for someone else. But I just come back to, this is a better team than last year. This is a better team than the team that beat the Heat last year. They have almost the entire rotation back with a healthier Rob Williams, and you've added Malcolm Brogdon. This should not be happening. At the end of the day, this should not be happening. That Philly team, I thought Boston was a lot better than them. That series should not have gone 7 games. They should not have gone 6 games against the Hawks, who are not even a real 7 seed. And for the defense to have slipped as much as it has slipped, I don't think he's been on point with the rotations. I mean, why were we getting Peyton Pritchard minutes in the first game instead of Grant Williams? Not using Rob Williams down the stretch of game 2. You know, there's so much that goes into coaching that we can't really sit here and say we know all of it. But this result has not been good enough for the Celtics. Again, it would have been one thing if it was close, but for them to have not been competitive with their backs against the wall, I think is saying a lot. I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, like, neither of them looked quite happy after game 3. I mean, obviously, but Jaylen especially seemed to really be questioning. He called it flat out embarrassing. I think that it makes sense to let go of Mazzulla, especially when you consider the coaching talent that's available. Frank Vogel, Nick Nurse, Mike Budenholzer. There's people with championship experience on the coaching market. And if you're making the decision to stick with Tatum and Brown, which I think you almost have to do, you have to find an edge somewhere else with the way the cap is being set up, the new CBA, et cetera. And if you can go get a coach with championship experience, guys who might be able to build out better staffs, I think you have to do that because it's going to give you a much better chance to win.
Well, you mentioned build out better staffs, and I think
it's like a skeleton crew. What is with that?
That's been a major issue for the Celtics because the brain drain within that coaching staff has been significant. Mm-hmm. Ime Udoka is gone. His brain power was not replaced. Will Hardy gone, his brain power not replaced. Damon Stoudemire leaves midseason, his brain power is not replaced. The front of the bench guys are just not as experienced as other teams' front of the bench guys. You're talking about Ben Sullivan kind of being the most experienced coach on that staff right now. That's been a major issue, and that is a fault of Brad Stevens as the team president. I know Brad tried at different points. Mm-hmm. He recruited Frank Vogel, tried to get Frank Vogel to join Missoula's staff before the start of the season, but Vogel is still getting paid by the Lakers, didn't want to uproot his family and come back to Boston for all that. I get it. But that's been an issue here. Like, getting out-coached by Eric Spoelstra, that happens. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA. But I think not having high-level assistants on that staff, especially when you are a first-time head coach, 34 years old, in just, what, your fourth year coaching in the NBA, it's an impossible task. It's an impossible ask for a coach to do. I believe, all things considered, Joe Mazzulla has done an excellent job this year. He took over this team days before the start of training camp. Mm-hmm. He kept the trains running on time. And look, that Philadelphia series, maybe say it should have ended earlier, but it ended in a positive way for the Celtics, in part because before game six, Joe Mazzulla reinserted Rob Williams into the starting lineup. And at halftime of game seven, the Celtics made a conscious decision to attack Joel Embiid on pick and rolls. And those two decisions contributed to winning. So if we're going to pig pile on Joe Mazzulla, you've got to give him credit for the positive things that he's done with the team. It will be interesting, Rohan, to see if the, as you said, the number of coaches out there on the marketplace right now has an impact on the Celtics. Do they feel they've got a chance at getting a Nick Nurse? Do they immediately cut ties with Joe Mazzulla and try to start a conversation with Nick Nurse? Frank Vogel's got a long-time relationship with Brad Stevens. Is he the right fit for this team? He's got championship experience. But one thing you also have to remember, too, is that Joe Mazzulla is the closest thing that Brad Stevens has to a protege. You know, Brad Stevens plucked him off that bench in, what, Fairmont State, added him to his coaching staff, made sure he stayed on that coaching staff when Ime Udoka took over, kept Danny Ainge from stealing him when Will Hardy took that job, and then elevated him when the time came to hire a head coach to replace Ime. There's a level of loyalty there, Chris, from Brad Stevens to Joe Mazzulla, and I think that can't be overlooked when it comes time to make a decision about his future.
So, obviously, Chris, I'm always willing to defer to you from the standpoint of the Celtics, your time around them and just in Boston and everything. But I, even before we got into the brain drain part of it, to me, this kind of screams. And yes, he's been, Eric Spoelstra has coached circles around him in this series. I think it's fair to say that. To me, like Rohan's point with the fact that they could have easily lost the round before, this kind of screams to me that you bring him back and that you're making some decisions for him with regards to his staff. I had forgotten about the Will Hardy exodus. Obviously, that's a really big one as well. Damon Stoudemire was within the season, which is rare that coaches leave your staff in the middle of a season and then not necessarily replace those people. The Ime Udoka thing, as you said, was basically on the eve of training camp. So it's been an unusual situation from that standpoint. Joe Mazzulla is very young. And like you just mentioned, the amount of investment that that Brad Stevens has put in him, I think, is reason alone to stick with him. Unless Brad's got a really good relationship or a really great respect for one of these many coaches that have become available recently. I'm sure he does. But at a certain point, if you feel like loyalty and stuff like that matters, you went out on a little bit of a limb to implant this person as the coach in the midst of the Ime Udoka stuff, knowing that there was a good chance he would become your permanent coach. You went out on a limb for him from the standpoint of some of the stuff in Joe Mazzulla's past, maybe not being the most compatible with regards to the stuff that Ime Udoka was essentially being let go for. And answered for him and vouched and said, I know him personally. I know the kind of person that he's become, and I'd like to think that that's in the past. You're doing a lot for someone that you would be willing to let go of in 1 year because he didn't really perform well in the conference finals in his first go round as a 34-year-old. Okay, I guess especially when we're looking at the fact that his bench is not really rounded out with really, really veteran guys compared to what Spoelstra has, or being able to go toe to toe with someone like Spoelstra in your first go round. I would expect that you bring him back and that you, years from now, look and you realize that maybe you have a Spoelstra on your hands if you're fortunate. Mm. But I'd be a little surprised they move on from him, despite there being some really great coaching candidates out there.
Well, Steven Silas is, I think, almost a lock to be on that bench next year. He's got strong Boston ties, obviously, family. He was born, I think, in Providence, and he's exactly what that team needs. A former head coach, a lot of assistant coaching experience. He's got the kind of personality, I think, that would fit in well alongside Joe Mazzulla. So I think a Steven Silas, maybe it's somebody else along those lines, just beef up the front of the bench staff to give him the sounding boards that he needs. But Rohan, I do think when the obit of the Celtics season is eventually written, we're going to talk about whether or not the Celtics overreacted to the Ime Udoka situation. Because what the Celtics deemed worthy of a basketball death penalty, what they deemed worthy of effectively a firing, was not viewed the same way by the NBA and was not viewed the same way by every other team that's out there. Ime Udoka, if not for the Kyrie Irving spectacle early in the season, would most likely be the coach of the Brooklyn Nets right now. Ime Udoka was the first coach hired when the coaching market opened up and Houston had a vacancy. They jumped on him before anybody else could. The NBA, Adam Silver came out and said publicly, we have no issue with Ime Udoka coaching an NBA team next year. The Celtics reacted differently. It's unclear exactly why, but their decision to part ways with a high-level head coach that took that team to the finals and had clearly built a connection with the players in that locker room.
A young guy.
Mm-hmm. A connection, by the way, that still exists to this day. Like, you still have players in that locker room, I promise you, that are still asking themselves, did Ime deserve it? Did Ime deserve to get canned for what he did? I'm not here to defend the morality of it or any of it, but could the Celtics have gotten away with a 15-game suspension or a shorter suspension that kept Ime Udoka on the bench? And if they did, would they be in a different situation than they were today? I'm telling you, Ime, at the very least, at various times during this playoffs, would have publicly excoriated his team. He would have gone after them for sloppiness, for laziness, for the lack of connectivity, stuff that Joe Mazzulla really isn't comfortable doing because he doesn't have the cachet or the NBA background that Ime Udoka has. So, Rohan,
and can
I honestly
does
think,
that
yeah,
look a certain way if he does that? I'm sorry, I know I interrupted you there. I didn't mean to do that. But now, even if he does develop that, does it feel weird? Does it feel inauthentic to the players when he tries to do more of that?
I don't think he'll ever look. Joe knows who he is, and he knows he's not a former NBA player with Greg Popovich's staff on his resume. Like, that's what Ime Udoka had going for him when he took this Celtics job, and that's what enabled him to go out and just blast away on these guys on a nightly basis in the first 2 months of the season. I don't think Joe Mazzulla will ever develop that. I think Joe Mazzulla is cut out of the same cloth that Brad Stevens is, because Brad Stevens also never went after his
calm
players. Also often took the blame on himself when things went south. I think, Rohan, that is what Joe Mazzulla is and what he's always going to be.
For sure. And that's where when I'm saying there's so much that goes into coaching that we can never really fully quantify, is there's a huge like personal dynamic here where you had Marcus Smart at the start of the season questioning why Udoka was fired. We know Udoka and Jaylen Brown are very close. I'm sure to an extent, I'm not, and maybe this has gone away, but I'm sure to an extent the Celtics players have felt like we're playing with the substitute teacher all year. And why? Like, why have we been forced to play with the substitute teacher all year? Someone who wasn't really ready for this position when he very first got the job. I'm sure, let's say Udoka had somehow left for another job, the first assistant on that bench that would have been promoted is Will Hardy, who, by the way, is like a spectacular coach. And I'm sure that they again, the Celtics didn't really have control of when the Udoka stuff came out, etc. Like you said, they had to make the switch very soon before the start of the season. Will Hardy is fantastic, like well loved, just a home run hire for Utah, and I think would have done a much better job with this team because I think he's even just a better personality fit with some of the guys, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I think that his style probably lends itself better to coaching this team. And that's what maybe worries me most about Mazzulla. Like, we can get into the X's and O's, all that, you know, should he be using his timeouts, et cetera. I'm just not sure that he's the right personality for Tatum and Brown in this stage of their career. It'd be one thing if they were younger and didn't have the playoff experience that they had. But, you know, this is a team with championship aspirations, and it's very hard to throw a coach, I think, like Mazzulla into the mix. You know, think about when Eric Spoelstra started or Brad Stevens started. They had time to grow with those teams and to make them into what they became. You know, obviously Eric Spoelstra took over when Dwayne Wade was still on the Heat, but that was a young team. They had like Mario Chalmers and Michael Beasley. Like, this is a whole different beast that Joe Mazzulla has been kind of asked to wrestle with. And I just wonder more than anything if they need kind of that strong personality or at least someone with the cachet. Frank Vogel has coached LeBron and won a championship with him. Nick Nurse has coached Kawhi and won a championship with him. Budenholzer with Giannis. Monty Williams has been around KD, Chris Paul. Like, to me, there's like a personal dynamic here that we can't quantify and we'll never really fully know. But for me, it doesn't appear to be a fit.
Yeah, I don't know if... Look, I think part of Ime Udoka's connection was that he was an ex-player. Was mm-hmm. that... You know, nobody grew up watching Ime Udoka games. Like, he wasn't that level of player. But they know he was part of, you know, the San Antonio teams. They know what he did. They knew his history. They knew his background. So I don't know if there's any guarantee that Nick Nurse steps into that locker room and gains its respect. I don't know if there's any guarantee Frank Vogel steps in that locker room and gains its respect. In fact, I think it's just as likely that Joe Mazzulla, you know, regains it with the right staff around him, with the right pieces around him. Monty Williams might be a little bit different. Monty Williams has always been kind of a player's coach and had some great connections with the teams that he's coaches, DeAndre Ayton notwithstanding. But he has always been that type of coach. So maybe that works out. But I think it's going to be a difficult decision because Joe Mazzulla has the basketball mind to be a great NBA head coach. Everyone knows this. Danny Ainge knew this. That's why he wanted to bring Joe Mazzulla onto that staff in Utah. And Brad Stevens obviously knows it. It's why he's worked so hard to develop Joe Mazzulla as a head coach. He was put into an impossible situation, And I think he's largely thrived in it, right? Like, he was third in the Coach of the Year voting this year. They're now in the conference finals, albeit one game away from getting swept in it. There are some things that need to be addressed, but I don't know necessarily need to be addressed just by firing Joe Mazzulla, Chris.
Can I say that in a year where we've watched Monty Williams lose his job, we've watched Mike Budenholzer, which I think says a lot about the state of the game, that was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago that he won a championship, and now we were expecting him to lose his job. Like, we kind of knew it, that it would probably happen. That we watched Doc and on down the line, Frank Vogel after he won his championship. We've come to expect this. Even if you win a championship, that buys you maybe 2 years. If you don't win one and you're kind of at the mountaintop repeatedly, close to the mountaintop, and you don't make it, you know, Monty Williams took a team that had not made the playoffs in however long and then got them to the finals in his second full year with them. And now we're looking at him, you know, looking for a gig. But Joe Mazzulla, somehow within all these, would still be the biggest surprise to me, even in light of them potentially getting swept by an 8 seed, just because of all the stuff you've said about the Brad Stevens connection, the fact that he feels an investment in him. He knew what it was to put anybody in that role after the Ime Udoka stuff. This is a team that has championship aspirations. They were only 2 wins shy of winning it last year. You chose to put someone that young, that inexperienced in that role. This is what you were signing up for on some level. It looks like they're going to come up short. But if you feel like he's got all those qualities and he takes after you, that he learned from you, at a certain point, we're going to have to start pointing more fingers at Brad Stevens. And you raised the question already of, like, were they too harsh with the Ime Udoka situation? And I imagine that was not just Brad Stevens' decision. Him and Wick Grausbeck sat there in that press conference and took a lot of questions. So it's not just him, but I would be stunned if they let go of Joe Mazzulla. I think you have to be willing to let people grow into certain situations. And again, I point to Eric Spoelstra. And yes, that was obviously different given who was on that roster in Miami. But I think it says a lot about an organization and frankly about a culture if you're trying to develop one and trying to rid it of certain problems with the Ime Udoka situation, that you allow people to grow into roles, at least let them fail, really fail, and not just in one season where, you know, it was someone's first season coaching the team. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm going to be fascinated by what happens. I would understand them making a move, but I don't necessarily know that it would be the right move for them to do that this soon if you really, truly believe in Joe Mazzulla. And we'll obviously find out pretty soon whether that's the case or not.
They also just gave, not that it matters that much, but they gave Joe Mazzulla a multi-year contract at midseason
right.
to the interim tag mm-hmm. off him. So they have invested right. in Joe Mazzulla as well. You know, you mentioned Wick Grausbeck. I think he's going to have a voice in all this as well. Wick is paying a lot of money for this team. You know, when Jaylen Brown gets his new contract, that's going to explode the Celtics' books. I think that's going to be a variable. Expectations from ownership are going to be a variable in all this as well. All right. Read Chris Herring's piece on Carmelo Anthony. That's up on SI.com right now. Rohan Nadkarni will be at the Heat-Celtics game 4, potential elimination game for Boston. Check out his coverage there. I will be at Lakers exit interviews. And what do you want to bet people read that stuff the most? The Lakers exit interviews, LeBron's future. Can't get enough. Oh,
NBA Finals.
Yeah. NBA Finals. LeBron's going to announce his retirement like before game 7 just to get everybody talking about
in the middle of one of the games.
Yeah.
You got to love it. Guys, we'll do it again.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.